But you've certainly caused a mess for yourself,
Yuli said, but then she grinned.
But who am I to talk? I ended up pregnant by your bonehead brother.
Yuli laughed then, and her mirth caused Fia to as well.
At least you're going to actually marry the father of your child,
Yuli said.
Your brother is yet to reply to any of my letters.
You write to him?
Yuli shrugged.
Su Ling is still his child. He has a right to know what's going on in her life, I suppose.
You're a good woman, Yuli,
Fria said.
Far better than me right now.
Don't beat yourself up. We all do things we regret. But in the end, they can become the greatest blessing.
Fia smiled, knowing she was speaking of Su Ling.
You still haven't answered my question,
Yuli said.
How many months now?
Fia frowned.
4 and a bit.
You won't be able to keep this a secret for much longer.
I know,
she said.
But it's this court case that has me more concerned now. I can barely fight in this state, much less 3 months from now. What am I going to do, Yuli? My family is depending on me, and I don't even want to think what my father would say. He seemed so happy just now. If I tell him this...
Yuli draped an arm over her shoulder.
Don't worry about it, Fia. We'll figure something out.
Just hearing those words brought a comfort to her soul. It was something she'd been yearning for, but simply didn't realize she needed. She was finally able to share her burden with someone else. Someone who could understand. Someone who cared. Fia's throat tightened with the sob as her shoulders heaved, and she let it all out. Yuli didn't say anything and simply held her tighter. When she was finally finished, Fia wiped her tears.
Thank you, Yuli. This is what sisters are for,
she said.
When you're ready, we'll tell your parents together. Okay?
Fia nodded, sniffling back more tears.
But what about the fight with the bird sisters?
Don't worry about that now,
Yuli said.
As Max would say, we'll cross that bridge when we get there.
Chapter 34.
The morning assembly was packed full of all ranks and robes. It was time for another 2-week rotation. Newborn brown robes joining us after surviving their gauntlet across the desert, while a platoon of legionnaires returned from the hell worlds and another took their place. As I rushed to take my spot within the ranks of the black robes, I spotted Blue Rose and Tulok. Instinctually, I gravitated towards them, but then Chief Yor caught my attention and directed me to stand 2 ranks ahead to rub shoulders with the likes of Jae-Soo Long and his crew. I could sense the confusion in Blue Rose and Tulok's combined stares as I leapfrogged ahead of them, but I decided to brush it off with indifference for now, or at least until the assembly was over. This would be my 10th or 12th now, but each time I was impressed at how President Su Li Zhen took notice of each and every one of us, mentally keeping track of who was advancing, and perhaps also who was not. I was no different, the High Marshal giving me a slight nod as he saw me in my new place. His opening speech was the same as I'd become accustomed to. A welcome to the new brown robes joining us, as well as a broad overview of our mission to defend the Empire against the scourge of the cursed stars. When we got to the rotation of the Legionnaires, however, something very different took place. Where I expected to see a handful of half-sane Legionnaires stumble shell-shocked onto the parade ground, newly returned home from their deployment, I instead saw only Chief Yora step forward.
Legionnaires of the 19th deployment of the 5073rd campaign,
Su Li Zhen shouted.
Give report!
Chief Yora bowed deeply before the High Marshal.
High Marshal, the 19th deployment was lost on entry to the hell world of Jiajiang. 0 gates destroyed. 0 aetherite crystal recovered.
Understood, Su Li Zhen said. Assembly! Let us pay respects to the lost platoon! To the 19th of the 5073rd, who paid the ultimate sacrifice for the good of the Empire.
Where there normally came applause for a successful sortie, a somber silence stood instead. I could sense fear coming from different pockets around me, more from the rear where the white and brown robes were than from the four ranks of black robes ahead of me. We were all well adjusted to what fate may lie ahead for us now. But damn, I thought, only four ranks separated me from my goal. A few more ranks of advancement, and I'd finally be on rotation to the cursed stars. So long as I learned how to fly as well as survive a night under the blood moon by that time, of course. But both those things were within my control. My advancement in them was up to my effort. And with Fia nearing the halfway mark with her pregnancy, no way could I afford to miss getting home before she gave birth. Less than 5 months. That's the time I gave myself. I had to be on my way back to Earth well before then, and I was well on my way to achieving it.
May the 20th deployment step forward, Tzu Li Zhen said, and 20 black robes from the front rank advanced. Assembly! Hail the 20th deployment of the 5073rd campaign! The last sortie to assault planet Gyajiang before rotating to planet Fei Ayung! Give them your praise, respect, and honor! I thrusted my right fist into the air in a salute that was nearly instinctive now. The words that followed came instinctively as well. Words that resonated deep with the Tao of my soul. Words that would see me come home after my journey across the stars. To those who now face the hell worlds of the cursed stars, we the Assembly of Tribute salute you! May we too one day tread the path of death and sacrifice ourselves for the glory of the Empire! Go, immortal, and return a god!
What the hell was that all about?
I jerked my head back, startled as Blue Rose approached me aggressively after the assembly broke. We were on the edge of the courtyard, away from most of the masses, but still I glanced about nervously as I sensed an embarrassing conversation about to unfold. At first, I thought she was referring to the moment of silence, but then I saw the look on her face. One of confusion. Anger, almost. What do you mean?
How did you advance two ranks overnight?
She said.
What did you do?
I froze as her blue eyes studied me. Piercing. Accusatory. I tried my best to engage my struggler's resolve. I didn't want to lie, but I certainly couldn't tell her the whole truth either. I don't know. I guess I did a little better on that blood moon test than everyone else.
Like hell you did. What did you say to Chief Yor in your debrief?
Nothing, I said honestly. I didn't say anything.
Bullshit! What did you say, Max?
I shifted to my back foot, eyeing her warily. I really don't have to tell you anything, you know. Her nostrils flared.
Oh, so that's how it's going to be, huh?
What the hell's gotten into you? Then I sensed it. Full-blown anger.
I thought we were friends, Max. Help each other out. Work together. Or was all that stick-together bullshit you were preaching just aimed at me?
What are you talking about?
Where'd you go last night, huh?
She said, stepping into my space.
You ditched us all to go do something. What did you go do? Did you bribe Chief Yara? Sleep with her?
Hey, cut the shit, Blue, I said, pushing her back. You're starting to sound like Jae-Soo Long. Ain't nothing going on like that. And how could you disrespect the chief by saying something like that anyway?
Well, make it make sense then,
she said.
How'd we go from being peers to you being our upperclassmen overnight? Or do you just have your head so far up yours ass now that anything is possible?
I tried to empathize with her, but just couldn't. This shit was coming out of nowhere, and it was offensive. I don't have to explain myself to you, I said. It is what it is. Simple as that. Blue Rose nodded, looking more pissed off than ever.
Nice. Real nice, bull man.
She turned and began stalking off. Well, I was going to ask you to help me learn how to fly, I called after her. But I guess that's out of the question.
Go help yourself, Max,
she shouted without looking back at me.
Seems you're getting pretty good at that, damn hypocrite.
I grumbled under my breath as she walked off. Damn stupid woman. Hell was her problem. Suddenly, Tulok was standing beside me.
What happened to you two?
I don't know. She got pissed off over nothing.
Nothing? I shrugged.
Well, me advancing a little. Ahead of her, I guess. Tulok folded his arms across his chest.
Probably thinks you tricked her into being partners instead of competitors.
I didn't trick anybody.
I said she probably thinks that. Do you think that?
Tulok shrugged.
I'm on a different path than you two. Phalanx is my end. I expect you to be ahead of me. She clearly thought you'd advance together.
Damn, I thought. I guess it might seem like a bit of betrayal from her point of view, but I didn't intend for any of this. But that didn't matter. It would look all the same to her. I sighed. Just another burden to bear, I thought.
You coming to Phalanx training? Tulok asked. She'll be there. Maybe you two could talk it out some more.
I shook my head. Nah, she's too pissed off right now.
And frankly, I was a little pissed off myself. But at what, I still wasn't quite sure.
I honestly hadn't given a thought to how leaving Blue Rose behind might make her feel. Hell, I wasn't thinking about her at all. I didn't have any reason to. And maybe that was the point. But I didn't know Chief Yoru was going to elevate me like this either. It was just another reminder that advancement came at a price, even the loss of friends.
I'll see you around, Tulok, I said. I'm going to take my frustrations out on some paper and ink. Oh, you're going to write her a letter? Tulok nodded. Good idea.
Wait, what?
No,
I'm going to... I let my words trail off with a sigh. I had meant my artwork, but no sense explaining to him what I was about to do either.
Yeah, I said finally. I'm going to go write some letters.
Although I had been referring to my art lessons with Master Eiji, I did end up writing some letters in the end. I wrote to Fia, of course, but then added a letter written in English for Kelsey. I wrote what I had experienced that night and hoped that she could confirm the same had happened to her, that we somehow connected across the void of space, berserker style. I did all this at the library. After using the key to open the cabinet, I absorbed more cosmic knowledge from the picture book of demonic entities. I spent most of the morning doing that, and between enduring the eyeball-watering images, I flipped between the three manuals I had gotten on flight techniques. I studied each with the same intensity as I did the Foundation manual, and with each reading, I committed more and more to memory. After going over all three several times, I was definitely settling on the airwalking technique as the one that best suited my style. But how was I going to adapt it to my use of frenzy? The basic principle was using concentrated bursts of chi at the soles of the feet to basically kick off the air as if it were a solid surface. Not jet propulsion like the True Flight style where chi was constantly being expended to keep you afloat. Quick and controlled bursts, that was the principle. But chi was not the same as frenzy in a practical sense. It was a form of energy, but chi could be exerted as a force as well. I'd need some way to simulate that through my use of frenzy. I studied the meridian sequences in the airwalk manual and in my mind compared them to the only other technique I knew that had some comparison. Frenzied lightning. Could I make it work? I pulled out a fresh sheet of paper and began scribbling down the basic lightning technique from my mind's eye. The heart of it was the Jing Meridian. Next to the frenzied lightning sequence, I wrote out the basic airwalk technique. There was a lot going on at once, with some meridians needing to be engaged by both of the technique. But perhaps not at the same time, I thought. I went to work puzzling through the characters, rearranging them like a mathematical equation. An hour went by as I scrapped the process 4 or 5 times, scrunching up the paper of my failed attempts. I was about to give up when I decided to go back through the texts again. The concept seemed sound, so why wasn't the math lining up? and then suddenly it hit me. I was trying to line them up in sequence. Make lightning that I then sent through the airwalk technique, which in itself was a method of turning energy into a solid form. But the frenzied lightning technique started with a solid form of energy, my core. Quickly, I pulled out a fresh sheet of paper, began scribbling in earnest, not linking the two techniques together, but ping-ponging them between one another, setting the connections on where they made sense in terms of the flow of energy, not the outcome. By the time I added the last meridian, the whole thing came together. A technique nearly 2 pages long. It would be a heck of a lot to memorize and master. But damn, if I could do it. I went to the top of the page and added a name. Lightning Walk Technique. Well, that sounds cool as hell, I thought. But can I actually make it work in reality? There was only one way to find out. I was just about to get up and leave to go to the practice yard when a voice came from behind.
Ah, so here you are, hiding in the back.
I looked about to see Master Eiji approaching with a set of brushes and fresh paper in hand. Master Eiji, I stood and gave him a bow. He waved his hand dismissively.
You need not bow to me. You are my senior now.
Never, I said with a laugh. Our robes may be different colors, but you're still the master here.
Indeed I am,
he said, dropping the brushes in front of me.
And you will become my student once more.
Actually, I just wanted to go try something real quick.
Nope,
he pointed towards the seat.
Yore said you might try to wiggle out of these, but she said it was of the utmost importance, so sit down and pay attention. Your first lesson in the brush starts today.
I honestly didn't know what to expect from the art lessons, or how long they would take. But Master Eiji was nothing if not thorough. It was an hour before he allowed me to even hold a brush. That time was instead spent by me cleaning them. Several times.
If you cannot maintain your tools, there is no hope for you,
he said. He then explained concepts of perspective, scale, lighting. Finally, after another hour, he sat next to me and began to draw while I tried to follow along next to him. We were drawing an apple he had brought that now sat on the table. I had no idea how difficult something could be. I had to keep starting over while he continued to reproduce the image flawlessly. You know, I said, back on my world, we used to have these things called cameras. Did all this in a second.
Your camera sounds like a cheat tablet. We could use this too, but what would be the point? The point is to develop skill so that you can produce what has yet not been seen. To create the image seen only in your mind's eye.
I sighed. Yeah, I get it.
Good, Eiji said. Now start again.
We continued after lunch and went for the rest of the afternoon. By that time, I was itching to be done with drawing. And between the brushstrokes, I also had a lot of time to think about Blue Rose. Now that the anger had worn off, I eventually did feel bad that I'd upset her. I'd made her change, and then what I did probably looked like the same thing she had done to me back out in the desert. Seizing the prize to go on alone. That wasn't my intention, but it looked the same. I decided I'd have to explain it all to her somehow, but right now some distance was probably good. As I looked to the setting sun, a new idea hit. I had no idea if the High Marshal had managed to close the gate, but seeing as he was at the ceremony this morning, he must have had some kind of success. Which meant they might start up the Blood Moon cultivation sessions again while the moon was still full. But that also meant now was a very short window of opportunity to gain access to the crystal alone. If I played my cards right. Hey, Master Eiji, I have one more favor to ask.
Oh?
He said. Chief Yoris said I should gain insight where I can. I know the Blood Moon is still full and the classes have been canceled. But I wanted to take a look for myself tonight. He looked at me oddly.
I have no authority over that. You will need to speak to Chief Yora.
Oh, I know, I said. And I will. But what I wanted to ask of you is if you could be available to watch over me, in case I need to be rushed to the crystal. His eyes widened some more.
Oh, that sounds dangerous.
Which is why I need you as my backup, I said. Will you help me? He shook his head.
I can't say I will, unless Chief Yora approves it. But if she does, of course I will.
Thanks, I said. I'll be right back. I ignored his protest to finish the art lesson and left the library to find Chief Yora. I tracked her down in her office, and after explaining my idea, she leaned back in her chair with a wry smile.
You never take a break, do you?
I mirrored her smile. No time like the present. The moon is still full to cultivate from, and I figured there might be more star-cursed demons out there as well.
Master Tzu Li Zhen closed the gate,
she said.
So unlikely. But there could be some stragglers, I suppose.
So you'll let me go?
It's still a risk.
I've already asked Master Eiji to accompany me in case I get into trouble. She chuckled.
So, I see you've thought of everything.
I nodded and grinned like an idiot. Pretty much.
Very well,
she said.
I will accompany you as well. I will use it as a test to see if training can be resumed for the rest of the Black Robes.
I pulled an internal fist pump. Thank you, Chief Yora.
Meet at the barrier at moonrise. We should know soon enough if the conditions are good or not.
She then huffed out a sigh.
And I could do without another late night, so be prompt.
Understood, Chief Instructor, I said and gave her a bow. I'll be sure not to be late. Chapter 35 Blue Rose continued to give me the cold shoulder in the mess hall, but I couldn't care. I had a major experiment to conduct, and I needed a clear head to be prepared. After dinner, I headed down to the barrier to meet up with Chief Yora and Master Eiji. In my head, I went over all the things I wanted to accomplish. I needed to first see the limit it would take for me to attract the attention of Izolix. Then I needed to see if I could sense Kelsey again. And finally, I needed to ingest just enough dark frenzy to become sick enough to warrant a private visit to the Aetherite Crystal. It would mean me dipping in and out of the Blood Moon to limit my exposure and keeping a close eye on my spiritual surrounds while on the inside. The last thing I needed was to be ambushed by Izolix and me losing control and turning into a demon right in front of both of them. The Blood Moon was already cresting over the horizon by the time I reached the barrier. Yora was waiting for me with Master Eiji.
You just about made it on time,
Yora said, looking up at the night sky.
Are you prepared?
I nodded and cycled my frenzy to engage my soul shield technique.
Let's go, then.
We both stepped past the barrier's edge, and I sensed my soul shield flare in response to the demonic chi. Glancing over at Yora, I noticed her jawline tighten a little, but nothing more. The landscape was barren, no demons at all. But that didn't mean they weren't out there.
We'll give it a couple of hours, Yora said. If nothing abnormal appears, we'll know it's safe to resume cultivation classes.
I merely nodded again, focusing on the dark areas of my peripheral instead. I lowered my soul shield technique and allowed the full effect of the Blood Moon to take hold. It was like taking a punch to the gut. My flame roared and shifted like being blown by a strong wind. As the edges of my vision began to darken, I dove into my spectral body and quickly traversed the spiritual landscape, seeking both Kelsey and Izolix. After about 10 minutes, I had sensed neither. I waited a bit longer, and the pressure of the Blood Moon began to truly weigh on my flame. I was in the gains-making zone now, on the edge of my limitations. This was where I had to balance increasing my endurance naturally and resisting the sudden pull that might send me over the deep end into full demon mode. I waited until I felt my muscles begin to twitch before raising my soul shield again to give myself a breather. About that same time, I noticed the first eye-ridden tentacle appear in the corner of my vision. He's coming, I thought. Time to ditch.
Are you all right?
Yora asked, glancing at me. Fine, I said, quickly jumping back into my physical form. I'll take a quick break and return. I stepped back within the barrier, regaining my focus, but mostly I was biding time for Izolix's presence to dissipate. I got back 10 minutes later and repeated the process, going a bit further before quitting this time. I performed the same maneuver 4 or 5 times in a row, steadily building my resistance and tolerance while avoiding Izolix's eye-ridden stare.
Something's coming, Yora said halfway through my 6th attempt. Mine a horde.
Within my mind's eye, I snuck a peek at the outside world, and sure enough, there were screeches of demons being carried by the wind. It was bad timing. I hadn't completed a full cycle yet, but I needed to poison myself before those monsters arrived. I had to speed the process up. Waiting for it to happen naturally was out of the question, which meant I had to do the next best thing. Cultivate a sip of the dark frenzy directly. Here goes, I thought, and reversed my flow of frenzy, drawing in instead of pushing out. I braced myself as the putrid energy pulsed through my meridians like razor blades. Instantly my flame darkened, and I fought back the urge to shift into demon form as perverse thoughts invaded my mind. Anger, malice, hate, rage. I pushed back with my soul shield and took in a gasp of air as I returned fully to my senses.
Iron Bull, Yora said, staring at me, brow furrowed. What happened?
I realized then that I must have cried out. Too much exposure, I said, stumbling towards the barrier, putting on less of an act than I had anticipated needing to. The dark frenzy really had done a number on my flame. It was still darkened when I got to Master Eiji for him to examine me.
Looks like you already overdid it, he said, staring at my Dantian. Come on in, to the tower with you.
I smiled inwardly as the next part of my plan unfolded, but my curiosity got the better of me and I hesitated to see just what kind of demons would show up. As the screams drew closer, the familiar shapes of humanoids emerged from the darkness. Chief Yora immediately flew into the air, distancing herself from the horde as it slammed against the barrier. She held herself aloft with a whisper of radiant chi, the form enveloping her like a sheer silk robe. I peered into the writhing mass, looking for signs of the alien demons from before, but this seemed all in all like a normal swarm. Demons born of the humans who once inhabited this world.
I see no anomalies, Yora said as she touched down beside us. A good sign. The president must have cleared them all out.
Which means it's safe for the rest of the team to get back in the water again, right? She looked at me oddly.
What water?
I chuckled. Sorry, a Terran expression. Has to do with sharks in the ocean. That only got a more confused stare.
Whatever the case, yes, she said. We will resume training tomorrow night. But as for you, looks like you'll need some healing first.
We're on our way, Master Eiji said. See you in the morning, Chief Instructor.
Anticipation built in my gut as Master Eiji and I made our way back to the prison and started the long climb of stairs towards the crystal chamber at the top of the roof. But as excited as I was, my soul was still poisoned for real, and I had no idea if the crystal could cleanse me the same way as Vanya. Be that as it may, I was honestly more eager to discover what those voices were that I'd heard before than to merely cure myself.
I'll give you a good hour, Eiji said as he unlocked the door. Remember to cultivate deeply. The crystal will cleanse your spirit of the demonic chi.
Thanks, Master Eiji, I said as he closed the door behind me. I waited another painful 5 minutes to ensure he was gone, cultivating steadily as I did so. The harmonics of the crystal did indeed resonate with my soul, but for true cleansing, I needed direct contact. The thing I'd been dying to do for days. Here goes, I said, faintly hearing the muffled voices within the humming of the crystal as I outstretched my hand. I finally put my palm on the glowing crystal, and my vision shrank to a pinprick as the entire world disappeared. In the void of darkness, it waited. The husk had appeared but briefly. A new aperture opened and then closed. Yet nothing did it sense now. Had it been mistaken? Perhaps. The remnants of the cursed flame were widespread across the cosmos, foul effigies to the great betrayer of the one true flame. But a husk was rare. A husk conjured wrath as well as defiance. The expansion of space within the primal realms was too vast to scour for it. It would wait until the husk would traverse the realms again. Then would it reveal itself to it, and then it would know with certainty where it lay. For now, the lesser husk held more opportunity. Its location was clear, and with its champion would it destroy the foul remnant completely. I found myself in darkness, like the inner workings of my spiritual realm. I engaged my spectral body immediately, assuming my blue-hued form. I summoned my spectral weapons as well, just in case, feeling the grip of my axe and glaive form in my spiritual hands. A yellow glow appeared before me, and in a brilliant flash of radiance, a hovering figure emerged. It appeared to be female, a naked form with flowing golden hair. Her body was made of the same glowing skin. As soon as she appeared, a deep sorrow resonated within my soul, and I could see her angelic face was marred with a look of sadness or despair. Her golden eyes widened when she focused on me, however, and I sensed a sudden hope spring from within her.
"The frenzied flame,"
she said, the words forming more in my mind than being heard.
"Art thou here to avenge us now?"
I wasn't even sure if she was speaking Yi or English, or if it even mattered, but what I was sure of was that she spoke in multiple voices. It was like listening to an auditorium of 100 people all speaking at once. "I'm a follower of the frenzied flame," I said, resting a hand on my chest. "My name is Max. Who are you? What are you, even?"
"We are the few of those who used to be,"
she said in her reverberating multivocal voice.
"Our remnant of what once was whole."
"Do you have a name?" I asked.
"Our name is Fei Ayung, but we are now but a remnant of the whole. Our memories are few and scattered. Pray thee, frenzied flame, art thou now come to avenge us?"
The name sounded familiar for some reason, like I'd heard it before, but I couldn't quite place where at the moment. But I had a bigger question to ponder about. "Avenge you? What happened to you? And are you the crystal, or are you trapped inside the crystal?"
"We are the few of those who used to be, a remnant of what once was whole. Our memories are few and scattered. Pray thee, frenzied flame, art thou now come to avenge us?"
I paused, wondering if I had heard her right. "Yes, I understand that. But what do you think I'm here to avenge you for?"
"Our memories are few and scattered. We are the few of those who used to be, a remnant of what once was whole. Pray thee, frenzied flame, art thou now come to avenge us?"
This certainly wasn't like having a conversation with Fenya. It was almost like who or whatever I was talking to wasn't quite real. A shadow, or copy, perhaps. I tried a different question. "Where do you come from?"
"Our memories are few and scattered. We are the few of those who used to be, a remnant of what once was whole. Pray thee, frenzied flame, art thou now come to avenge us?"
I stood back, studying the radiant, glowing woman some more. She was beautiful, but nondescript. Nothing significant at all. Like an amalgam of every beautiful woman my imagination could conjure. Whatever this was, she knew the flame. Knew instantly what I was and referred to me as the flame rather than myself. The same way Izolix did. Did this make her some kind of spiritual being like it was? Do you know Izolix? I asked.
Our memories are few and scattered. We are the few of those who used to be, a remnant of what once was whole. Pray thee, frenzied flame, art thou now come to avenge us?
I was batting 0 for 3. It was like communicating with a broken computer system or something. The interface was there, but there was no data to back it up. A shell, perhaps. But I couldn't deny what I was feeling coming from her either. The pain and sorrow. Maybe I was asking the wrong questions. I had to try a different take. Cycling my frenzy, I engaged a more subtle technique than blunt questions. You seem like more than one person to me, I said, approaching her slowly. And I know you can't remember much, but I think I can sense everyone's sorrow coming from within you. At the mention of the technique, the woman let out a surprised gasp. Instantly, a pulse of energy radiated from her, and as it crashed into me, visions of horrors filled my mind. There was nothing I could make out clearly. It was like watching a collage of a million points of view all at once. But in each there was a common theme. Death. Thousands upon thousands of deaths. I cried out as I simultaneously experienced each one, my mind screaming. Flashes of the blood moon appearing in the night sky. The sun becoming the raging cosmic eye of a cursed star. People from some age and place I didn't recognize fleeing in panic. People being torn apart by monsters and demons as terror filled their hearts. I felt it all. The helplessness, the cruelty, the suffering. And then from somewhere deeper, a new sense emerged. One of sadness and despair, but also of violation and injustice. A sense that what was happening should not be so. A new power then appeared from within the madness and chaos. A power influenced by the fiery darkness falling from the stars and the pain and sorrow coming from below. It sympathized, taking on a new form. From the hate and chaos of the cursed stars, it emerged. A brilliant, frenzied flame that gave strength to the suffering with a single thought. A single gift. Defiance! The world exploded into bright yellow flames as I emerged from the vision with a gasp, still finding myself within the spiritual realm. My head was spinning, the remnants of what I had experienced evaporating like a dream. I had perhaps glimpsed far more than I could comprehend. No, I said, trying to force my mind to not close, to force myself to remember. I will not choose to unsee what I have seen. I engaged my soul shield technique, not knowing what else to do, and with the sound of a striking tuning fork, my thoughts instantly cleared. I felt the struggler within me collapse to his knees and weep with the thousands of new memories from everyone's sorrow imposed upon his soul. I saw the flashes of insight from the cosmic story I had witnessed rattling inside my mind. I could still barely make sense of it now. But at least it was still there. A half-finished puzzle yearning to be completed. The golden-hued woman was hovering over me still.
Oh, frenzied flame,
she said while reaching down to me, her voices the ones of all those who had been slain.
Will thou now avenge us?
I didn't know how to respond. I lacked the conviction and strength to say yes. Even though I felt I needed to. But I wasn't the flame. Merely a follower. I'm sorry, I said as honestly as I could with struggler's resolve. I just don't know how. Her face saddened. But then, like she hadn't even acknowledged what I'd said, she merely repeated her words again.
Oh, frenzied flame, wilt thou now avenge us?
I was about to try and answer her again when a sound emerged from the real world. I quickly withdrew from the spiritual realm, just in time to pull away from the crystal and drop down into lotus position, right as Master Eiji entered the room. He looked surprised to see me, like he had forgotten I was in there or something.
I didn't think I'd find you awake, he said, helping me up from the ground. Looks like you could use some sleep now, though. Those eyes of yours look more bloodshot than ever.
Yeah, I said, mumbling my words. Guess I got a bit more exposed than I realized. Master Eiji adjusted his glasses as he examined my dentin.
Seems like the crystal did the trick, though. No trace of demonic chi.
I checked and confirmed the same within my flame. Not only was it back to normal, but it seemed even larger and brighter than before, filled with new truth and insights into the unknown. Had I just achieved another breakthrough? I wondered. Perhaps. I wouldn't be able to test for sure until I faced the Blood Moon again, but I'd had enough of dabbling in the cosmic realm for one night. As I followed Master Eiji back down the stairs, something else was nagging at me, though. Something small, yet something that couldn't be just trivial. Her name. I recognized it somehow. Heard it recently, but I wasn't sure where. I could still barely remember it myself, just a phonetic sound. Master Eiji, I said, taking a chance. Have you ever heard the name Fei Yong, I think it is?
You mean Fei Aiyong?
My eyes widened instantly at the recognition. Yeah, that's it. Where have I heard that name before? Master Eiji chuckled.
The Assembly, perhaps? It's the next planet on rotation.
Planet?
Yes, he said. It's the name of the planet set for our next deployment.
I briefly recalled it now, the president mentioning the name. But that caused only new thoughts to stir within my mind. How did it get its name? I asked.
Eh?
The planet. Did we name it that, or was that the planet's name already before it was attacked by the cursed stars?
We do not know the original names of those worlds or their inhabitants, Master Eiji said. But the great Imperial Marshal, Wei Chulu, is said to have heard the whispers of those names from the aetherite crystals he recovered from the planets they were on. He supposedly named all the hell worlds imprisoned under the cursed stars that way.
Wei Chulu, I thought. The same guy who drew all the pictures. Did our crystal come from Fei Aiyong?
Why? Eiji asked. Is that the name it whispered to you?
I froze dead in my tracks. I'd said too much. Master Eiji then broke into a laugh.
I'm only teasing, boy. Come on and get some sleep now. Clearly you've had a long day.
Yeah, I said, relieved. It really has been a long day. As I said goodnight to Master Eiji and finally retired to my room, my mind was spinning. A deep unsettlement now lay at the core of my soul. I felt the injustice of millions, yet I couldn't help them at all. My own struggles seemed selfish in comparison, but I couldn't deny I cared more about them than the nameless millions I had just seen slain. Perhaps it was the limitations of my human spirit or my human nature in general, but with it came thoughts of Blue Rose as well. I had prioritized my advancement to get home to marry Fia over thinking about slowing my advancement to keep pace with her. Maybe that was just how it was, how things had to be. Maybe it was naive to even think that I could be everything and save everyone and do everything all at the same time. I had to choose, and I had chosen. I had chosen Fia and the people I loved. But I had to admit,
with the knowledge I had now, those choices weren't feeling very good at the moment. I pushed it all away with a sigh and then turned in my cot to try and get some sleep. Chapter 36. The next day, I got up to start training early. I began with some martial forms and calisthenics in my room before breakfast. I still had a lot on my mind, but the physical exertion worked as a welcome distraction to it all. I was still pondering what I had experienced with that entity within the crystal. What was it even? Some kind of combined spirit? A shattered soul of a planet? I had so many questions. Above them all, though, was what I would do about her request to avenge them. Or even if the request was truly for me. Maybe it was something I would just have to ignore for now, I decided. I had more immediate situations to deal with, like a fiancé who was about to become a mother in a few months and me needing to marry her before that, or me just becoming a dad in general. It still sounded strange to even think like that, but that was to be my future. The thought focused me, and I felt a sudden reassurance as I realigned with my path. I finished up my routine and headed down for chow. In the breakfast line, I saw the other thing that was giving me mental heartburn. Blue Rose. I tried to make eye contact with her, but she turned her head sharply as soon as we did. I had to admit, it kind of hurt a little. Still pissed off, I guessed, and with some reason, to be fair. Leaving her behind would leave her with a cohort of people she didn't know or trust, and I had gained hers. Might have just broken it as well. I sighed inwardly. Maybe she would come around in time so we could have a proper conversation, but I was feeling nothing but ice from her at the moment. I decided to eat by myself and then headed to the library for my art lesson with Master Eiji. With what I had learned the night before, the name at the bottom of those pictures held all new meaning for me now. Master Wee Chu Lu had to have been a berserker like me. There was no doubt. And if he managed to survive, if not thrive, at the academy, then so could I. After my art lesson, I spent some extra time digging into the histories of the Sword East to the Hell Worlds. The entries were made by various platoon leaders of the Legionnaire deployments. They mostly contained the base information, such as the location of the drop, what kind of resistance they encountered, where and how far they dug down to find Aetherite, and how much they brought back. It appeared that the first few deployments to a hell world were targeted at removing the gates. Those ones also seemed to have the lowest survival rates. There were several entries where only two or three Legionnaires returned. But when they had taken out the gates within the vicinity, it cleared the way for later deployments to spend more time finding and harvesting aetherite crystals rather than fighting off hordes of demons. Details beyond that were sparse, but there were some that identified unique or unusual demon sightings. One in particular mentioned a mountain walker, which seemed something like those giant demons with tentacles for eyes that I'd seen on the moon. I was tempted to waste more time looking through the drawings to see if Master Wee Chu Lu had drawn a picture of one, but I had other things to attend to. Gaining secret knowledge was cool and all, but that wasn't going to get me off this rock and back home. I needed to advance to become a Legionnaire, and top on my list to do that was learning how to fly. I grabbed the manuscript from my lightning walk technique that I had scribbled out the day before and headed towards the training grounds. A new cohort of black robes was already in place undergoing Balank's instruction from the woman who reminded me of Threya. A few of the new black robes I recognized as former white robes who were in my platoon from when I took down the Jolup. They smiled and offered me bows of respect as I passed by, which earned them a good scolding from their instructor. I found a quiet corner away from the activity, both to give me some peace to focus as well as some privacy. I'd never attempted the technique before, and who knew how bad my first few attempts might turn out. I started by rereading the Meridian sequence again. There were a hell of a lot of steps, and my spiritual muscle memory needed to be trained to carry them out in a heartbeat if I was going to make it all work. When I was confident that I had it at least memorized,
I went through the actual motions, slowly channeling frenzy through each of them. It was difficult at first. Generating lightning was second nature, and my spiritual muscle memory in that regard was well trained. Several times I ended up just performing a frenzied lightning technique out of habit when I was trying to do something else. A good hour went by with nothing to speak of. I decided to switch up my method and start with the unfamiliar parts first, the parts related to the airwalk technique. Those came more slowly, but surprisingly more assuredly. In this case, I was simply learning and not unlearning and learning as I had to do with the lightning. After another hour, I finally went for a dry run with just the airwalk by itself, channeling my frenzy through the various meridians that ended at the balls of my feet. When I did, nothing particular happened, but I did feel a warming sensation. Progress, I thought. Maybe. It was time to add some power to see if it really worked or not. I went back to the meridian sequencing for my lightning technique and began combining it with the airwalk. I went through all the sequences correctly, but again, nothing happened. It was too slow. The momentum of energy simply wasn't there. The timing was vital, I realized. I had to push this through fast to have any real effect. I tried again and again, getting slightly faster with each attempt. It was like trying to recite a 20-word sentence in less than a second. After half an hour, my brain and spirit was frazzled, and I wondered if it was this hard for chi cultivators who use true flight. I was nearly on the cusp of rethinking my method and giving the other flight technique books another try, but flying around like that just didn't suit my style. I dug deep, thinking about how much this meant for me to achieve. Fia and the baby, Master He Dong and his position, and not to mention Kelsey and my people in the wild. You've got to get it together, man, I told myself. I started through the sequences again when a spat of laughter came from behind. I glanced over my shoulder to see Jay Su Long, along with a handful of his cronies, all of them wearing stupid grins.
Did I not tell you we'd find him here?
Jay Su Long said.
Let's see if it's true or not.
I turned slowly with a blank stare of indifference. What the hell you want, Jay Su Long? The clown stepped forward slowly with his hands behind his back.
A little bird told me that you're learning how to fly. So we all came to see if it's true or not. So what do you think, boys? Can a bull fly?
He broke into a mocking, sarcastic laughter again, and his mates followed suit. Ire filled my gut, but I wasn't taking the bait. I have nothing to prove to you.
See?
He shouted, loud enough for everyone within the training ground to hear.
The Iron Bullman is just that. A weight far too slow and too heavy to fly. An incompetent ground pounder is all you'll ever be. You can forget ever becoming a legionnaire.
The Thraya-like woman instructing Phalanx sauntered across the grounds.
What's wrong with being a ground pounder? Someone has to do the dirty work while you all fly away. Watch your tongue, Phalanx,
Jay Su Long snapped. I have faith in the Iron Bull, someone said. I turned at the familiar voice to see Tulok stepping from out of the crowd. Show these scoffers, he said with genuine lemonade in his heart. The Iron Bull already bested you without flight, Jay Su Long. Imagine what he would do with it. Jay Su Long threw his head back with a laugh.
Imagine is right, because it will never happen. Go on and prove me wrong if you can, Lead Bull.
He continued to laugh while more of the lower-ranked black robes got behind Tulok and began chanting to spur me on.
Bull man! Bull man!
Ah, shit, I thought. What the hell had I gotten myself into now? And how did I even get myself into this? 1 minute I was practicing in peace, and this asshole comes from nowhere to start some shit, and now I'm on the grand stage with performance anxiety? And then I saw it. The orchestrator of this little display of power gone wrong. far to the back of the crowd and leaning against one of the courtyard pillars with folded arms, was Blue Rose. A subtle smirk was on her lips, a look of satisfaction with malice in her heart. She was the only one I had told about learning how to fly. I thought I'd be angry, but I felt something worse. Pain.
Come on, then,
Jay Sulong said.
Show us!
Show him, Master Iron Bull, Tulok cheered me on. Prove him wrong!
Although I was certain he wasn't part of Blue Rose's little plan, Tulok wasn't exactly helping me. The guy genuinely believed in me, though. All of these people did. I sensed the room and felt everyone's faith in me.
Shit!
I couldn't back out like a punk now, especially not in front of Jay Sulong. Ah, what the hell, I thought. Berserkers work best under pressure. I cycled my frenzy and ran through the Meridian sequence again. I didn't need to do anything fancy, just hover in the air for a second. Show him it was easy peasy. I cultivated the ire in my heart to fuel my technique. I'd show him in Blue Rose. Lightning Walk! As I shouted the name in my mind, I busted through the Meridian sequence in a flash, sending my frenzy bouncing between my jing and back before redirecting via the airwalk sequence to my toes. A huge bang of thunder went off as a flash of lightning shot from my feet. I wasn't ready for the force that came with it. It felt like I'd been shot from a cannon, but my feet took the lead, sailing over my head and twisting me into a lopsided somersault that sent me careening into one of the courtyard pillars with a bang! I fell to the ground, landing flat on my back. A hushed and stunned silence filled the air as the heat of embarrassment filled my face. And then, with perfect comedic timing, Jay Sulong and his crew let out a raucous mocking laugh. Half the assembly joined in with them, and as I slowly and painfully got to my feet, I could see the looks of disappointment in the faces of my supporters. Tulok gave me a half-hearted smile and a shrug as if to say, "You tried."
"Well, I guess we have our answer now," Jay Sulong shouted above the laughter. "It's what we've all known since we were children. Bulls cannot fly."
That got another round of jeers, and I suddenly found myself back in Foundation School all over again, being teased and bullied by ye kids who were better than me, mocking me for my failures, humiliating me for simply not knowing how to do something I'd never done before. I wanted to be angry. I was angry. But none of that could help me now. I looked for the source of all of this. Blue Rose. I expected to see her laughing right along with everyone else, mocking my failure. But instead, I saw nothing but pain and hurt in her eyes. Regret and shame. Like she'd just done something she knew was wrong, something she shouldn't have, but it was too late to take back now. I saw the beginning of tears forming before she quickly wiped her eyes and then dashed away. I endured the painful, jeering laughter in silence, saying nothing. And then I understood what it was that all cultivators hated worse than even death. The loss of face. I wasn't sure for how long I remained there. By the time everyone got called to their next lesson and moved on, I was still just sitting there in the courtyard, enduring the pain of both betrayal and humiliation. I still didn't know how to process it all. I knew I'd hurt Blue Rose, but did it truly warrant this in retaliation? And why the hell did I even care? The thought frustrated me. I should have used indifference. I should have walked away with nothing to prove, but that would have made me look weak. And maybe that was the problem. I let my ego get the better of me.
Still here?
I looked over my shoulder to see Chief Yora approaching. I scrambled to my feet to give her a bow, but she simply gestured for me to not get up, and surprisingly, she came and plopped right down next to me.
So, I understand you had quite the bad first flight,
she said, jutting her chin towards the crack in the pillar. So you heard, huh?
I believe the entire academy has heard by this point.
That made me feel even worse. Damn, what a flop. I sighed. My own fault. I got egged into doing something I wasn't ready for.
But you did it anyway?
Yeah, I said. Stupid, I know. She chuckled.
Does it make you want to give up?
Give up? I shook my head. No. But go back in time and choose to not do it? Maybe.
Yora laughed. That's the spirit. It's something you must become accustomed to, you know.
What? Failure?
Public failure. It can happen. You've enjoyed quite a bit of public success. Every yin must have its yang, after all.
I thought about that a bit. Yeah, I guess so. Although this one felt more forced than natural. Or maybe it was just karma.
Do not let this setback deter you,
she said.
You have already proven yourself quite capable and valuable. But trust me, I will not approve your next advancement until you can get off the ground when you need to.
Is learning to fly that important?
As I said, you are proving too valuable to lose on a stray demon surge that taxes you beyond your limits.
She then gazed out across the courtyard, and by the distant look in her eyes, I could tell she was already transported to someplace else.
The demon hordes of the hell worlds are vast like seas. Their surges like waves. No one can withstand them forever. To be able to extract yourself quickly before death is paramount.
I nodded, taking that in. My understanding of the risks increasing. A pause fell between us, and I sensed a rare opportunity then. A chance to ask her anything. There were many things that I wanted to know. About the missions, the hell worlds, how we actually got to mining the crystals. But I knew all those would come in time, when the classes presented themselves. I instead sought something a bit more abstract, esoteric, but perhaps crucial to what I was feeling in my soul. Chief Yora, have you ever had to make a choice between advancement and staying true to the ones you love? She turned to me, raising a brow at the odd question.
Do you find yourself at that crossroads now?
I thought of Blue Rose and what she'd done, as well as the entity within the crystal begging me to avenge her. Kind of, sort of. I need to get back home within a few months to protect my family and marry the woman I love. Yet here, meeting that goal has sort of led me to leaving some people behind that I also kind of love. Well, not love, like a friend love.
And this troubles you?
She asked. I've always been pretty certain of my path. Still am, I think. But being here, within these ranks, I didn't realize that advancement could come with consequences. It's not of my nature to leave anyone behind, but more and more, I think the universe is telling me that I have to. And that just rubs my soul the wrong way. Yora didn't say anything for a while, perhaps digesting what I'd said.
Every 2 weeks, I become the last voice that over 1,000 people will ever hear before their deaths. And after that, after many months or even years of training, I challenge those same few survivors to face a fate that will likely see their demise all the same.
I was now the one to look at her oddly.
You asked if I ever had to make a choice between advancement and those I love. The reality is that few ever get that choice. What I must do every 2 weeks is a choice I make for those people. They have no choice but to advance. This is a blessing as much as it is a curse. The burden of such a choice is terrible. But in the end, there is only one correct answer.
What's that?
You see me still here, don't you?
She said.
I could have returned to my homeworld a champion. Married, raised a family, lived comfortably. Yet instead,
I send thousands to their deaths every 2 weeks, all in the name of advancement. Is this the better choice?
I didn't know if she wanted a real answer or if it was a rhetorical question. I merely shrugged.
It's not the best choice for me,
she said.
But it is for the Empire. The enemy we face does not sleep. If we do not make the sacrifice to advance, to grow strong enough to push back against the stars, all hope we have for a future will be lost.
I nodded. So you're saying when you advanced, there is no choice?
Yes. If you advance, you have made the choice already,
she said.
Count it lucky if your choice still leads to some happiness, and even more so, if it leads to love. It sounds like you may be lucky enough to have both.
With that, she patted me on my leg and stood.
You'll want to master this flying thing quickly if you want any hope of getting home to meet that deadline of yours. The best rotation for success will be 2 months from now. You'll want to be able to pass your final exam before then.
What's the final exam? I asked.
A night of survival under the blood moon. Your platoon must stand by morning, but unless you have command of the air, it's doubtful if you'll survive.
I understand, I said, and then stood to give her a deep bow of respect. Thank you, Chief Yora, for your instruction and your words of wisdom. She smiled with a hint of lemonade.
I have high hopes for you, Iron Bull. Do what you must to stay true to your path, save your family, but always remember what you have learned here. The outside world has no idea of the terror that lurks in the darkness, and whether you choose to fight it here today or tomorrow, the truth is you will fight it one day. Because once you are strong, you will be called to fight. The only difference is where that fight will take place.
She then chuckled.
For me, I choose to make the sacrifice so that the fight remains on those hell worlds and not our own.
Chief Yora then turned and walked away, and a profound sense of resolution and revelation resonated within my soul. The world suddenly seemed both small and vast at the same time. I'd seen the unseen. And no matter what I did, I couldn't ignore what I knew to be the truth now. I thought of Fia and getting back to her, freeing the Earth from the Empire's control. But in the end, would we all just become like those lost voices in that crystal? No matter what we did or what we accomplished, would we all just be doomed to become another world conquered by the cursed stars? I couldn't allow that to happen. Wouldn't allow that to happen. I got myself off the ground and focused my frenzy. That final fight might be decades or even centuries away, but as Yora had said,
count it lucky if your choice still leads to some happiness, and even more so if it leads to love.
I had to do both, but I wouldn't be going anywhere without learning how to fly. One step at a time, I reminded myself. And with that, I ran through the meridian sequences and again attempted the technique. Chapter 37.
Yo, Max. How are you, bro? I hope you're doing better than us because things have pretty much gone to shit back here since you left. Those bird sisters have done a total number on us. They broke up the neighborhood with some stupid new law that prevents non-Terrans from living in the native housing district. Fia kind of saved the day by moving Yu Li, Su Ling, and Guizhu into her parents' place with her, though. That's going okay, I think. But now those damn bitches challenged her to a duel or some crap a month or so from now? Anyway, don't mention I said any of this when you write Fia. She was trying to not give you stuff to stress about, but I know how you work. I'm not sure if you got any cultivators to hate out there in prison, So I figured I'd give you the lowdown on those bird bitches so that you can cultivate some rage. You can thank me for the frenzy later.
I put Kelsey's letter down to digest what she'd wrote. Son of a bitch, I mumbled, causing a harsh whisper to come from one of the librarians. I was taking a break from my artwork midway through my rendition of the flying squid monster. It had been a little over 6 weeks now, and my artistry had gotten pretty good with Master Aeg's daily instruction. Between doing that, binging on the histories of the deployment drops, learning mining techniques for the Hell Worlds, and spending my afternoons trying to perfect my lightning walk technique, my days were well spent. I was able to make 3 whole steps with the technique now. It was a bit like doing Qigong, except you were jumping off the air itself instead of objects like in parkour. It was mentally taxing, though, and it took all my concentration to get the timing of my body and my meridians right to kick off the air at just the right moment and angle to propel myself through the air and maintain control. I was still at a novice level, though, knowing that to truly be effective, I'd have to be able to lightning walk subconsciously while I fought with my other techniques. At nights, I cultivated the Blood Moon and pushed my limits to the max while skirting the detection of Izolix. I could last up to 6 hours now by cycling in and out of my soul shield, which put me in good stead to challenge the final exam. A few times I had even detected Kelsey again as well, but it seemed mostly random, and I couldn't reproduce the encounters at will. That was why when I received her letter, I dug into it with a fervor, hoping Kelsey might confirm the things I'd sensed. But no way could I have expected her to open with something like this. What the hell were those damn bird sisters up to? A new law to separate us? Kelsey was right, though. Just the thought brought ire to my gut. Part of me wanted to fly back to Earth right now and knock their damn blocks off, but I had to settle for what Kelsey had written instead. I had to trust they could take care of things while I was away. I read on.
Now for what I was really writing you about. A huge demon has appeared in the wild, and I think it's the reincarnation of that Hong Fang guy, the one you killed, or one of the ones you killed. Anyway, he calls himself Izongzhang now, but it's not really him, I don't think. At least not fully. He's a demon for sure, with maybe Hong Fang's memories or something, I guess. He's totally psycho, though, and wants to destroy the whole city. So far, he hasn't been able to get through the barrier, but I worry he might get strong enough to at some point. Any berserker tips you can send to help, please do. I've been cultivating under the Blood Moon as best I can, but I don't know if I'll ever match his strength in time.
I put the letter down again. I totally wasn't expecting this. And thankfully, Kelsey had had the sense to write to me in English and not Yi when mentioning all this stuff. I didn't even know Izolix had that kind of power to recycle demonic souls. I read on.
I tried to fight the thing and got my ass kicked. But here's the weird part. I swear I sensed you come to my aid that night. Was that you? Please tell me that was you. I heard your voice, and you sort of brought me back from the edge. Write me back to confirm, okay? If it was you, maybe we could find some way to communicate in real time in the spirit realm or something. Also, write back in English, okay? Don't be a chune. Love you, Kelsey.
I sat back perplexed, taking in everything Kelsey had written. The demon, the bird sisters, the spiritual connection. It sounded like all hell was breaking loose back home, literally. And I couldn't do much about it. The odds were against us all in that regard, but that didn't mean I wouldn't try. With everything that was going on, I needed to get to the Hell Worlds and back faster than ever. I tore a fresh sheet of paper from my sketch pad and began responding to Kelsey in English. If there was some way for us to communicate through the spiritual realm, we needed to figure it out. And fast. Fia looked at herself in the mirror and frowned. She was wearing nothing but her undergarments, and all she could see was belly. 6 months on now, and nothing was looking or feeling good. Anxiety roiled in the pit of her stomach, bad as the morning sickness that seemed to come at any time of the day, it felt like, much less mornings. Even now she felt nauseous. She sighed at herself.
"I'm such a chune,"
she muttered.
"Why did I let myself get pregnant?"
She knew why, of course, but it seemed so foolish now. What should have been a happy and expectant occasion was now looming over her head like a death sentence. And that was due to just the thought of eventually having to tell her parents, much less having to fight the Bird Sisters in just over a month's time. It was enough to make her go weak in the knees and feel like throwing up again. Even her face was getting incredibly fat. Her thoughts left her as a knock came from her door. Panic flared immediately as she rushed to pull on the oversized robe she had come to wear of late to hide her growing stomach.
"Just a minute,"
she called out.
"I'm not decent. Fia, it's me,"
a familiar and welcome voice called back through the door.
"Praise the heavens,"
Fia thought. "It was Yu Li." Fia still cautiously opened the door, making certain Yu Li was alone before she slipped her inside.
"I've got them for you,"
Yu Li said with the widest grin on her face.
"Wonderful! Thank you!"
Yu Li quickly unwrapped the parcel she had tucked under her arm, removing the brown packing paper and revealing three sets of robes inside. Yu Li picked one up to present it to her. It perfectly matched her clan's motif of black with silver trim. Fia had asked Yu Li to secretly purchase her larger robes, but these ones seemed strange indeed. The craftsmanship alone seemed odd, and for some reason she couldn't tell if the robes were too large or perhaps too small. She felt the material and the